Welcome to Coffee and Change. I'm Bill Kirst. As a business professional, a U.S. veteran, a lifelong learner, and an active listener, I help others navigate, understand, and adapt to our ever-changing workplace and world. As a third culture kid, I call many places home. Presently, Seattle is where I explore my creativity through the power of words and images. In this podcast, we journey with our guests, gaining knowledge and inspiration from their stories.
Hey all, happy April. Thanks for listening as always. Today, I'm excited to welcome back for the third time, Becky Morrison. I first spoke to Becky in May of 2021 when her debut book, The Happiness Recipe, was published. We then reconnected to talk about Coaching Carrie, her own podcast, all about Sex and the City. And today we're talking about human design, something that changed my life and something that Becky introduced me to. You may have heard a little bit about human design, but in this episode, you'll learn all about it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the discussion. So good morning and welcome back, Becky. It is so great to see you and welcome you back to the podcast, Coffee and Change. It's been a while. In fact, I probably have to go back and see what episode it was. The world looked very different at the time. So I want to start off by welcoming you back and asking, how are you and how has your journey been since we first connected on the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, it really has been a minute and it feels like it has been a long time and also a short time. Like it has gone very fast. What has happened? Well, I think we already talked about this. We've had a geographic change for my family, but more exciting than that, on the work front, I've started doing, in addition to one-on-one coaching and the book that I wrote about happiness, I've started doing more work with organizations to help them think about how to leverage happiness concepts and specifically positive psychology-based concepts to have a happier, more engaged workforce. I think I've since also gotten a certification that since the last time I talked to you in applied positive psychology. And so it's been really fun to take really practical tools into the workplace in that way.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. I also am keenly interested in that certification. And, you know, I followed a lot of the work of Dr. Martin Seligman, positive psychology, probably around the same time you and I first connected. It was in the height of the pandemic. And I remember taking some of the courses through Coursera and whatnot, and yes, found my way to Dr. Seligman and have just gone down that beautiful Alice in Wonderland rabbit hole of everything that is positive psychology. And it's wonderful to see it infused in doses in not only our personal life, but as you said, with organizations. So that brings me a lot of happiness and joy knowing that people in organizations, and let's be clear, organizations are merely just a collective of humans, are starting to ask for this stuff.
Yes. And I've been lucky, just I think in part because of my background, to be doing a lot of work in the legal space, which is a really interesting space in which to be engaging with this stuff.
Yeah. And that's something I when we have our conversation today, I would love to talk about as well, because when we did connect at first, you're right, you have this past experience as a lawyer. And at the heart of law and Libra and balance is logic. And I know some of the stuff that we'll be talking about today, specifically around human design, which is a tool that you introduced me to and has changed my life, is something that is really interesting, because initially people probably would think about it as not a logical tool to introduce into a logical space, or those that are seeking logic to drive their life, when in fact, it is singly probably one of the most powerful tools I've come across to help ground me in what is right for me, as well as what is right for the world that I'm in. So that's a big opening there.
Yeah. I mean, wow. Yeah. No, but I think you're right. And I think, you know, human design has changed my life in similar ways, right? I often describe it's interesting because I get a lot of, I encounter a fair amount of skepticism. Like, human design is based on some real ancient concepts. It's based on I Ching. It's based on the chakra system. It's based on the tree of life. There's some stuff from Kabbalah. There's some stuff from astrology. And when people hear that, they're like, I don't know, you know? And yet it has been a powerful unlocking tool for me as a human walking through this existence to really own that I am uniquely wired, uniquely created, and I need to honor that to really feel good about the way that I'm living.
Yeah. And you know, the thing that is the hardest sort of first step to take, I believe, and I would welcome your thoughts on this, you know, having gone through it a number of times with people from all walks of life, all organizations, all industries, is granting yourself the permission to have the inquiry in the first place. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, it still seems very heavy to me when I remember the first, whether it be something as comprehensive as human design, and I do want to say that it is comprehensive because you said it involves all of these systems, or it's something that maybe got a little sort of fly-by-night popularity like the Enneagram. That's also a very deep system. But sometimes people just like to sort of skim the surface. And the reason I think people like to skim only is because when you do the deep inquiry, you know it's going to change how you see the world. And that's kind of scary. Would that be accurate?
It is scary. Yeah, no, I think it is scary. And look, I mean, my attitude on human design and really any of those, any assessment, if you will, because that's kind of what human design is that two things. Number one, let's experiment with it. Like, we don't, if you get into this and find it does not resonate with you, you get to set it down. Yeah. It does not have to become your guidebook. And then the second is, I think almost always assessments are most useful for not for the boxes that they put us in, but for the questions that they raise. And so the way that I approach human design and the Enneagram and Myers-Briggs, which is not so great, and I mean, you name it, Gallup strengths, yeah, Via strengths, any of them, is this is the basis for a conversation about getting to know yourself better. And so if you can kind of take the, like, oh, I'm going to have a label now, and this means this thing about me, or this is true and that's not, and really just embrace, like, what can I learn about this, about myself from this description or this label or this system? It gets a lot lighter and a lot more fun.
Yeah.
To play with.
And those are such great words: experiment, light, and play. And I love the fact that you said it's a basis for a conversation starter. So let's back up a little bit and recount, yes, how you and I, obviously, we had a very sort of in the box conversation, right? We talked about life. We talked about you being a lawyer. We talked about you writing your first book. We talked about happiness. And then at some point, something sparked in you to ask a different conversation. Do you remember what that was like, our exchange?
I don't know how I got there. I mean, and thinking about the timing, I was probably fairly early in my human design discovery process at that point. And I think I had just, you know, as I experimented with myself, I started to think about how can I use this with the people in my life, my family, my friends, the people that I'm working with. And for me, it was like the more I could play with it with other people and have them say, oh, yeah, that resonates. Oh, yeah, that changes my perspective. The more it validated it as a tool for me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, where I've landed on human design is I don't necessarily need to buy into, and I'm not saying I do or don't, but I don't need to buy into all the foundation I just need to buy into this as a tool that has been really powerful in the way that I work with people. And that's enough for me. And so I suspect, thinking back, you know, that it was more just a curiosity of like, I wonder, like, here's this very thoughtful individual that I've connected with in you. And I wonder what he would think about this.
Yeah.
I wonder if he would be part of this experiment with me.
And I'm so glad I said yes, because, you know, I think back to, and we can unpack a little bit. Again, it's going to be really hard to explain this very comprehensive and powerful tool in an audio episode, but
yeah,
my goal is to have it so that people are intrigued enough to want to entertain the, you know, starting that conversation. But I remember both the generosity and the hesitancy that happened all at once on both our accounts, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love about your story and your retelling of this is you say I was in the nascent stages of understanding what this tool was, and still you took a risk, right? You said, hey, mm-hmm. I'm going to listen to sort of this inner voice saying, maybe I should ask this guy if he's heard of this, and if he hasn't, if he'd be willing to take a walk with it and allow me mm-hmm. to sort of practice what I'm learning with a person who would be open to that initial conversation. And boy, did it crack me open.
Well, I mean, actually, I feel like we just had like a testimonial for human design, right? Because part of why I was in a place where I was listening to that little whisper is the more I learned about how I was wired, I learned how important it was for me to be in a posture of response, so to be triggered by something outside of myself, mm-hmm. and then also to trust the sort of inner feeling that wasn't a mental, like, should I or shouldn't I ask Bill about human design? Like, what are the pros and cons? Yeah. But rather like, should I ask Bill about human design? Yep, that feels expansive in my body. I'm going to do it. And I'm not worried about where that leads us or what might go wrong or whether it's the right or wrong thing to do. It just feels right. So I'm going to ask and see what happens. And so I really feel like for me, you know, I boil down the biggest gifts I've gotten from human design. And one of them is this idea that like our best decisions are not made in our brains.
Wow. This is a lawyer saying this, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, right? And so, and it's interesting because I use human design with every single client without sometimes giving them a full human design unpack, yes. right? I just lean into, how are you making your best decisions? Okay, it's not up here in your head with a pro-con list or a bunch of explanation. Like, I work with some really interesting, you know, like CEO level people who've had a ton of success. And when we boil down their best decisions, they don't have a logical explanation for them.
Right.
And when they learn to trust that, that's huge, because the thing that creates the most friction in their lives is this like analysis paralysis stuff where we get stuck in making the quote unquote right decision versus trusting our kind of internal GPS that we all have.
Yeah. I think it's so important to give sort of shine light on that analysis paralysis, because I think one of the interesting things is as we sort of evolve and emerge amongst 2020 and beyond in the pandemic, there's a lot of people looking back on decisions that were made, decisions that weren't made, choices that were made, choices that were avoided. And this is on all fronts, right? Personal, mm-hmm. political, health, like there was no aspect of our life that wasn't touched and changed. And I think in those moments, what was really interesting is we were not really afforded the opportunity or the luxury to do analysis paralysis. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
And what's really interesting to me is I reflect back on it just for myself. There were so many decisions I made from a different place, not from the headspace, because my head was saying, I need facts and I need data. And there just wasn't any. We were in it.
And we had, everything was unknown.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yep. New place, like completely no textbook, no answer book, no handbook. And so we were to resort to our inner GPS. And mm-hmm. I'm curious from your standpoint, like obviously people like myself, like you, others that we've talked to sort of in this realm, that lit a light in the lighthouse, if you will. And that was super powerful. Mm-hmm. But I also see there's a number of people who've probably snapped back to that analysis mm-hmm. paralysis. And whether it's looking in the mm-hmm. rearview mirror and saying, oh, we should have done this or we should have done that based on what we know today. Do you feel that tension today too, where like there are quite a few people that have snapped back? And again, it's not a judgment. It's just an observation Mm-mm. where I wonder like, oh, please tell me we didn't have all that wonderful doing.
We didn't lose yes. this. Yeah. Yeah. I see the snapback happening in the way you described, right? Just the sort of like, now we have the space and time to engage in more analysis. And so we're doing it. And then I see the snapback happening in another way too, which I'm not going to describe super artfully, but I'm going to try my best. And I think it's this, it's like, we've collectively been in a state of high alert for so long that we are operating in this very like activated space from a nervous system perspective. Yeah. So almost like perpetual fight, flight, or freeze. And I think that takes us out of this connection with our internal GPS, our body too, and puts us into, I have to figure this out, which is a real mental space. And we're figuring it out from A, with ignoring this internal GPS, but then B, from a mental space that is not our highest self either. It's a very like fear-based activated part of ourselves. And I see that with a lot, like, I feel like that is a collective problem right now, because I mean, like, we could have a laundry list, right? Mm-hmm. Of world stuff that started in 2020 or maybe a little before and has continued since then and has impacted all of us differently. And then we all have our own personal stuff,
right?
Like the way that our lives looked through that and any other things that were on our plate. And I just, that to me, I don't know how that ties into human design per se, except that it's created this disconnect,
yeah,
where we forget that we have this toolbox and we aren't tapping into it and we aren't using it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. The word disconnect resonates. The word dissonance also resonates, right? Which mm-hmm. is sort of this, you know, these frequencies that are kind of just not aligned. And one of the things that I've noticed is that there is this urgency to trying to get things in alignment quickly, even if that means we are still misaligned individually.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it sure makes sense. And it's, I don't think it's possible actually. Like it's like trying to make the machine run in alignment, but none of the gears are aligned. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? So I actually think the missing link is figuring out how we can be more aligned.
Yes.
And I think if more of us can be more aligned, then the machine, if you will, yeah, whatever that is, whatever collective we're part of, becomes easier to align. And I think to me, like, so that's the, you know, on the top, in the top, however many lessons from human design, that's another one of them, which is this idea that alignment is so important and alignment is unique to each of us.
Yes.
So like what is aligned for me is not going to look the same as what is aligned for you. Mm-hmm. And there's something about this like total permission to be who you are, how you are wired, that's huge. And it's changed not only how I show up, but it's changed the way that I give empathy to other people.
Yeah.
It's really easy to look at somebody else and say, oh, like they need to fix that. Like they're lazy. They should work harder. Maybe also they're not wired to work like you're wired to work. And what if that's true? And what if we allowed you to work like a generator and them to work like a projector?
Yeah.
And we saw each other for the gifts that each of those kind of, and that's real high level, but like each of those types can bring to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, that's the gift, the unforeseen gift of some of this is the generosity that comes with once you're able to acknowledge and see and feel, probably more importantly, feel that somebody else in their own alignment is in no mm-hmm. way robbing me of mine.
No. Yeah. That gave me chills. Yeah, that's it.
And I think one of the challenges that we continue to bump up against is the narratives and the sort of societal and systemic boxes. Like you said, like you're either this or that. And if you're that and I'm this, then we can't together. Right. Mm-hmm. You tapped a little bit and I'd love to get into some of the parts and components of human design. So folks listening are probably like, okay, I'm definitely interested, but like, what?
No.
Yeah. So you mentioned like generator versus projector.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about sort of the and we'll start kind of 30,000 foot, you know, knowing that we're not going to get into the exact experience, but let's set some framing for folks that maybe have heard a little bit about this and what it means.
So I talk about human design like a layer cake, right? I mean, and it's like not just a layer cake, it's like those fancy crepe cakes that have like a million layers, right? Like it's, or a really tall layer.
Good.
I don't know, however you want to go with that analogy, but like there's a lot of layers. And so in my work, mostly I play with the bigger sort of 30,000 foot foundational layers. And so those are things like your type. And that's, I reference generator, projector. There's also manifestor, manifesting generator, and reflector. But those are really like what I would call your internal operating system. Mm-hmm. So I think about it like, are you on an Android or are you on an Apple or are you on something else, right? Like they really are sort of like foundational to how you are overall structured. Then within those, you have each of those types come with a strategy, which is a really like a, how do you walk through the world? How do you take action and make decisions? Mm-hmm. The next layer is authority. So each of us have a unique source of authority, as we discussed, that is not in our brain. Right. And where does that live for you? And how do you develop a better relationship with that? Then we also have what are called profiles. And so without going too deep in those, these are sort of like archetypes mm-hmm. that map to us, that might determine sort of how we do things, how we show up, how we share our gifts. I'll give an example. And again, not trying to overwhelm people who are new to this, but I'm a line 1-3, which means I'm super curious and I'm trial and error. So my job is actually to show up and learn a bunch of stuff, experiment with it. Not surprising that experiment's one of my favorite words. And then share what I've learned about what worked and what didn't. Mm-hmm. And within all of these, there's also sort of like shadow sides, yes. things that are indicators when we are out of alignment that can also be just as useful as understanding what alignment looks like. Then below that, this ties into sort of the chakra system. There's a whole system of energy centers in our body mm-hmm. that can either be defined or open. Defined means we have a consistent internal source of energy. Open means we're subject to outside energy, and that can change how we experience walking through life. And then beyond that, in each energy center, there are gates and channels. So you can see how this goes deeper and deeper. We've also got some planetary placements. I tend to stop at that profile level, mm-hmm. that line level. I don't get deep into unpacking gates and channels. And there are people who are really skilled who've done that. I've had some great readings. I've gotten some really interesting internal insight. But for me, the big gifts in, and especially in the coaching work that I do, are understanding that upper stuff, that right. like, who am I and what kind of device am I running? Mm-hmm. How do I make decisions? How should I be interacting with the world, that strategy piece? And then like, how do I show up and do my work and bring my gifts forward and really play in that space? We can play for a long time there.
Yeah. And
actually,
and the thing which is so, I mean, you walked through that. There's a lot of complexity in there, but you walked through it. And I think even as people listening, there's probably a lot of people thinking, how do I sign up for that? Like just understanding that would be a great place yes. to start, because whether it's our internal OS, our operating system.
Yeah.
Whether it's understanding where our source of authority resides, that is separate, beyond, and planted long before you ever got a degree or certification or a career or accolade in anything. I mean, that alone yes. is a pretty like revolutionary and evolutionary concept. And then mm-hmm. this aspect of, you know, there, it's graceful to invite the shadow in. Right. So much of the work I've done the past several years has been shadow work. And people are like, what's shadow work? And it's complex as well, but it's not something to run away from. It is something to understand and gracefully care for. Right. It's almost like yeah. having a smaller child version of yourself who mm-hmm. maybe was neglected in some way. And regardless mm-hmm. of how far along you are in life, what you've achieved, what you've accomplished, what you've celebrated, that small child has a Pasco, collect $200, front of the room, going to have a tantrum in your head, yep. no matter how much work you've done. And understanding that concept and being very generous and kind and soothing, right, as we would soothe mm-hmm. a young child who's kind of having a difficult moment, is probably one of the most important things we can do for ourselves. And it's still very controversial.
Yeah. Well, and the way I think about shadow in this context too, is like, if I take my car to the dealership to get an oil change, they run me through this little alignment check, yeah. right? And when I'm out of, like when my wheels are out of alignment, I don't say like, oh, I don't want to hear about that. Don't fix that. Don't do anything. And to me, like from a human design perspective, when we talk about shadow, it's really, am I in alignment? Mm-hmm. Am I at my highest, best expression of my internal circuitry, myself, the way I'm wired, or am I not? And I get to fix it. Yeah. I get to adjust it if I want to. To me, there's value in noticing where I'm not in alignment so I can make changes, because it's probably causing me some negative experiences, some negative emotions. I mean, each one of those types that we talked about, generator, projector, manifesting generator, all those, they each have a theme that is self and not self, meaning you'll know when you're in alignment if you're feeling this, and you know you're out of alignment if you're feeling this. Mm-hmm. And those words, it's so interesting because they're words that are very similar. It's like satisfaction or frustration. And yet when I work with people, they tend to use the word of their type.
Yeah, right.
So like manifestors, for example, their not self word is anger. And they will talk about being angry versus being frustrated. Generators tend to be frustrated or satisfied. So it's just so interesting to me. You know, people read it and are like, well, is it really telling you anything? Because it's like basically different words for the same thing. And I'm like, I don't know. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it telling you anything?
Me.
I don't know. For me, it is. Because I don't really get super angry a lot, but you bet your butt I get frustrated. Yeah.
Well, and I think there's a power in the words, right? It all really comes down to the language. And I think one of the things that we've knowingly or unknowingly gotten lazy about is language and words. And so when we say, you know, angry versus frustrated, somebody might say it's just a synonym. It's saying the same thing. I'd say, is it? Is it?
Not for me.
For me, it's not.
Not right? In my experience.
And I think that's where a lot of times the conversation should begin. And that's why I anchor so much in etymology and origins of words and like, what is the word you're using and why? And what is your definition of that word? Tell me. And most of those definitions of words are what you've described, Becky, as a feeling, right? Mm-hmm. They don't go to the Merriam-Webster, you know, dictionary,
right?
They talk about a sensation. And I'm like, that's really helpful. Now let's figure out if that sensation, logically, for a moment, matches the definition of that word. And if it doesn't, maybe we give ourselves the permission to find another word.
To find a better fit word. Yeah.
And that alone, I've seen personally in the hallways of corporations, in boardrooms with nonprofits, in education, in healthcare, just that small gesture, that gift, that granting can completely alter the outcomes.
Yes. I think you're right. I mean, I feel like there's a whole separate conversation in there about the ways that we are not connected, especially to feeling words, and that we aren't trained or taught and we don't have a lot of practice. And so we end up using sort of like these, it's like throwing a dart, but instead of hitting a dartboard, you're hitting like a wall, you know, like we're close, but not quite there. And I think a lot of what you're talking about is just actually being willing to be with the feeling long enough to find the right word is not something that we're good at, particularly if the feeling's not a fun one.
Yeah. And we're not incented to do that either, right? We go through school and we go through systems and they say, stuff your feelings. Like,
please don't, especially the negative ones, right? Like, I don't want to, don't be angry. Don't be sad. Don't be frustrated. Suck it up. Yeah. I mean, there's just, absolutely.
And that's, and I think when huge cataclysmic change happens around us, all of that comes to the surface, right? This aspect of like, at some point, everyone has to take a breath, right? You cannot be suffocated for that long. I would love to tell you a little bit about, you know, how I've used recently the human design. Well, first of all, the chart that you drew me and that we first had continues to be, I will say this, on pretty much every device I have, I've got a screenshot of it. So
there's,
you know, for those that will get into this, there's a map, right? It's sort of a profile, if you will, of the human torso. And as you know, you've talked about, Becky, it has the gates and the alignments and it can all look pretty overwhelming to the untrained eye. But as you get that first ability to go through that, and this is what I really appreciated about how you walked through it with me. You know, I remember when we first had that follow-up, I had that initial sense of like, wow, this is overwhelming. There's a lot of lines, a lot of symbols, a lot of numbers. I'm not a numbers guy. Like, I'm going to fail the test.
I don't math.
I don't math. Like,
fair.
And all of that came up, which told me everything about who I was, right? And we walked through it. And so I'm proud to say it's a photo on my phone. It's easily accessible on my desktop. I think I have a version of it on my Remarkable tablet, which is sort of my offline. Mm-hmm. And that's where I ended up drawing and writing a lot of my reflections in response on the map that you provided, which was really, really helpful. And since then, it has become this internal GPS just to revisit every once in a while, right? When I'm going mm-hmm. through a large change in life, it's like, hey, you know, maybe pull this up and just sort of see A, what's coming up in you, and revisit these truisms about yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing which has been really fascinating, and I'd love to share this with you and get your thoughts on it, is as I've talked about it briefly, just in doses with people, you know, their curiosity comes and then they'll say, well, would you do that for me? And I'm like, immediately I have this sort of imposterism and I'm like, I'm not trained. I can't. I shouldn't. And what's interesting is they say, I don't want somebody who's overtrained. Mm-hmm. I want what you just said to me and the light in the expression in your face that came to life when you talked about this alignment and this peace and this joy. I want that. And so mm-hmm. I had to ask myself, well, what do I do with that? So I took it back and I've probably done a what I call a writing, probably less of a reading, but more of a writing for three friends. And interestingly enough, for one of their newborns.
That's fun.
And
that's the most fun.
That's the most fun. And the friends one continues to evolve because we're all following each other in stages of life. When I did it for my friend's newly born child, what was really interesting is I handed her a handwritten document that was 20 mm-hmm. pages long. And she was reading it over dinner one night and she just started crying. And I said, tell me what's going on. Like, you know, and because this is an offering I've never really done before, but please tell me what's going on. And she said to me, she reminded me, she said, you know, when you held my child in your arms for the first time, you said to me that he has all the answers already in his eyes. Mm. Like you looked at him and you said, he has all the answers already. And then you looked at me and you said, I just want to make sure the world doesn't force him to forget those.
Yep.
And when she was reading this 20-page handwritten write-up about her child through the lens of the human design, that's what she felt. And this child is now 4 or 5 years old, and she revisits that document and calls me and says, you have no idea how powerful this is. I see what you wrote, and I see it in him, and I see it coming through, and I get to protect that with this knowledge in my hand. And honestly, I don't know if there's a better gift. And so from her to me and me to you and him to his mother and all back to you, thank you.
Yeah, I could cry. That's just beautiful. And that line of like, that is it. And that is true for all of us. We have all the answers, and the world really tries, not maliciously. It's like a total failure of humans to get outside of themselves, but tries to make us conform to one answer or one set of answers. And it's just like, once we can recognize that we all are wired uniquely, and if we listen to that wiring, we're going to do great things and we're going to make the quote unquote perfect impact on the world. It's just a huge release. I've watched human design transform relationships. Yeah. I've watched human design transform parenting. I've experienced it in my own house. I mean, like small little details within my chart. And I'll give you this example. And again, I don't want to like talk too much shop because I know it's huge, but I've got an undefined emotional center, which means I do not have a consistent source of big feeling energy. I live in a house with three other people who have defined, not only defined emotional centers, but that is their source of authority. Right. What practically speaking that meant up until I discovered human design is that every feeling they had, good or bad, I took it, felt that I had to fix it, and amplified it.
Yeah.
I made the awesome more awesome, and I made the worse or terrible. That's real. Yeah. It happened. And I literally can feel their feelings in my body. And when I got my first human design reading, I was like, oh, they aren't mine.
Return to
sender. I had no idea. Right. And so, I mean, do I do it perfectly? No, because I've had a lifetime of doing it wrong. Yeah. But now when I feel it, I'm like, is it mine? No, I don't need to fix it. I can just literally let it metabolize through me and go back out. And it's theirs. It's theirs to manage, to handle. And I know when it gets too much that I need to leave the space. Yeah. And I don't mean like I need to move out. I just need to like take a walk. Yeah. I just need to be with only my energy so I can figure out how I'm feeling about the situation instead of being influenced by their feelings.
And that in itself, like to discern all of that, right? Because everybody that's listening has felt that on either end.
Yes.
They've either been you or they've been one of your family members in that case.
Yeah, one of my family members, exactly. Yep.
And one of the things that I find to be really important is that people share examples like that, because when you're in that moment, when it's happening to you or a family member, you think you're the only one. You think, and more importantly, you think, well, I know what I need to do for me to best be me. But then the next thought you're battling with is, but I'm selfish, right?
Yes.
And that's actually the polar opposite.
No.
Complete
no.
opposite of what's happening is
yes.
you're being the most generous by acknowledging and knowing this about yourself, that these are not my feelings. These are not my emotions. I'm getting the uptake. I'm getting caught up in them.
Yes.
And so it is probably most important for those I love, this household and me, that I take a walk. And I can relate.
Yeah.
I do this many, many times, you know, come from a big family. And this is probably why we loved beach vacations, because no matter what, you could always take a walk on the beach.
You can always leave. Yes. Yeah.
And we knew at times it was like you could gauge the type of walk on the beach and understand the level of anger, disappointment, frustration, resentment that had happened, right? Based
yes.
on time, based on gait, based on if they're getting in the very cold ocean and swimming, wow, we've really uncovered some stuff. And you live,
yeah.
you know, you live near the water now in Charleston. And so
yeah.
You can understand all of that, right? The importance of standing for people like you and me, I imagine standing in front of a large, tumultuous body of water is sometimes just what we need.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate what you said too. I mean, I think it's, and I'm going to say it again, because I think it's really important for people listening, that honoring your wiring is not selfish.
Yes.
It is actually allowing you to show up as your best self
yeah.
with those people you care most about.
Yeah. And that is still a revolutionary
mm-hmm.
gift to grant. I think we're doing better. I think there's pockets of it that are still happening, but I'd love your thoughts on, right? You now dance in the spaces of, you know, one-to-one coaching, one-to-many coaching, corporations, CEOs, nonprofits. Do you see I don't want to necessarily call it improvement, because that implies that, you know, that we were failing, and I don't think it's a failure, but do you see trends that allow you to say, or allow you to acknowledge that people are trying to kind of take on new tactics and tools to be better aligned and to not be so binary, right? And this, like, we're either in the box or we're not. Is it more generous from what you've seen these past several years, the changes you've gone through and the people that you've supported?
I see signs of hope, right? I mean, I would say most people come to me when they're ready to play in the gray.
Yeah, it's a great way to say it.
I mean, it's just so, it's not even when they're ready to play in the gray. It's like when they're ready to get comfortable at playing in the gray. They might have been forced to play in it and they're not sure what to do with it. And so I see hope in that way, right? And I've had the great good fortune of working with, again, some leaders who I know that the work we're doing is changing their lives personally, but because of their position of influence, it is also changing organizations. It's changing cultures. It's changing, you know, the experience for a bigger group of employees. And so I have a lot of hope. I mean, like separate from human design, the fact that I'm in a place where I'm invited into organizations to talk about why happiness matters to our work is a huge sign of hope to me. Yeah. It's like an acknowledgement that if we are not doing what we need to do to be good stewards of ourselves, we are no longer going to be useful, even to the capitalist machine, not to be too, you know, dramatic, but that's the reality, right? That like continuing to operate in this space of work till you burn out and then hope you're happy when it's done isn't working anymore. And we need a different way, and a different way can still be successful, can still be profitable.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, the science says it can be more profitable. So that's exciting for most people too. Right.
You know, one of the things I remember encountering in, you know, Dr. Martin Seligman's course was that aspect of framing psychology for so many years has been framed from a place of, you know, what you are not, right? What you are yearning for. And what you have a lack of, and somebody must have taken this from you at some point. And it has always been from that sort of scarcity approach that we have said, in order to solve, we must identify what is lacking. And I remember how much of a signal switch it was for me, you know, through Dr. Lori Santos's work, as well as Dr. Martin Seligman, to say, what if you chose to actually focus the opposite? And said, it is not about what you don't have, but let's start from a place of the things that you do have, right? It's essentially the gratitude practice a little bit, and understanding.
Yes.
Starting from that place, putting those tools in your kit, and then approaching the challenges, and then approaching things. And again, like most things in life, it was so simple and so profound all at once.
Yes.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the other piece of that that's evolved kind of more recently, and I'm like blanking on the name, but there is a new model of wellness that instead of having it be a spectrum of unwell to highly well, right? It puts it more in a quadrant where, for example, you can have low mental health, but also high mental wellness.
Yeah.
And so that we can be working on all of these sort of thriving things, even if we are struggling with a mental health condition, for example, or even if we're not even struggling, have work with. So it's this idea that I think in the past, it felt a little bit like, and true for physical wellness too, it was the same model. It felt like if I have an illness or a limitation or a chronic condition, I can never be in this wellness space. And that's simply not the case. Mm-hmm. And so decoupling those two things combined with what you were just talking about, I think really changes the way we think about how we want to engage with well-being and wellness, both mentally and more broadly.
And then if you put that whole thing we just talked about on the morale track in a workplace, it gets really interesting. Really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've had the opportunity to facilitate a couple conversations around things that were micro behavior changes. And the smallest thing. And this is why it's also really important, the way we design tools and systems, the way we design our technology, if we do not design them with that intention that allows for micro behavior changes or small signals or whatever it is, you know, like the hand raising in an app like Teams or Zoom, it seems so insignificant. You're like, well, yeah, of course, put a hand raising thing. It has changed the way that people engage in this forum, where you don't have to talk over one another. You don't have to be lost in a huge virtual room where nobody sees you, nobody, you know, calls upon you. The smallest little thing, right? Which is, hey, the hand raising. And even take it further. When it first came out, it was just a hand raising. People said, well, how do we know who to pick on first? They added a number next to it. So now it's like 1, 2, 3,
so now
4.
Now we know the order of people who raise their hands. Yeah.
And isn't it interesting how we are talking in 2024, this technology that has now become so pervasive, and the piece that we forgot when we designed it takes us back to what we used to do in preschool.
Yeah. Well, and the interesting thing about that too is it removes any unconscious bias, right? Yeah. Like if you add those numbers in, there's no, I happen to be looking at my friend or the person I work most closely with or the person who's most like me or whatever unconscious bias we might have is gone. Yeah. And there's no, there can be no argument about fairness per se, right? Because it's in order. And it makes you sort of wonder, like, how do we solve that in the in-person meeting situation, right? Because now we've got this great technological solution. Anyway, but I think, you know, it's interesting. I feel like so much of the last 3 years of my life has been a story of simple but profound. I mean, it's all, everything I've learned yeah. in the last little bit is simple but profound.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I think that's precisely the experience that I had when you cracked open the book for me. And, you know, that book still sits right over there, right next to The Untethered Soul, right next to The Surrender Experiment, right next to Seed of the Soul, right next to Deviate, The Science of Seeing Differently, right? Like these are books that that are well worn in my study, in my home, in my life. And I just want to thank you for listening to that inner GPS, because, you know, hey, paths cross for reasons we don't always understand. But it has become an integral part of understanding who I am. And I'm grateful for that. So I wanted to say thank you.
Well, I appreciate your gratitude so, so much. And it's such a nice affirmation for me to keep, you know, keep doing it. Keep listening to the nudges. Yeah. And you know, I want that for everyone. I want that for, you know, the people I know and love. And it's something I work on with my kids all the time. It's like, I want them to know the freedom of trusting themselves in that way.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful to you for your openness in whatever it was. I'm so curious. And now I kind of want to I wish we could recreate whatever it was that I picked up on that was the door cracked open. Yeah. And then your willingness to be like, yeah, I don't know about this, but let's explore it. So that's a testament to your personality too, and your inherent wiring. And part of why I value this connection so much is you're just a thoughtful, curious soul.
I appreciate that. And thank you for coming back on and kind of, I don't want to say retelling your story, because it's not a retelling. It's just like, it's like the next chapters of this. And one of the things that's been yeah. such a gift for me is welcoming back people that have been on years later. And I will share this feedback with you. People are really excited for this because they love to listen to stories of people that made an impact at one point in their life. And then hear mm-hmm. what they've gone on to do and how they've grown. In fact, you know, yes. people have listened recently to some of the return guests and they've said they sound different. Their diction is different. They're like, and I'm like, yeah. And understandably so, one of the things that really fascinates me is sometimes those guests who return a second or third time, and listeners will reach back out and I'll say, well, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed it. Like, what part did you enjoy the most, or what was most profound? And mm-hmm. it's almost like they were like, I didn't even hear the words. What I heard was the affirmation. What I heard was the confirmation. Mm. What I heard was the confidence. What I heard was they bet on themselves and it paid off.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can replicate that. That's like, it's a beautiful thing.
No. That's awesome.
So yeah. that's yeah. what I know that will be the same case with this one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I mean, there are days, and I mean this in a positive way, where I am unrecognizable to myself and my life is unrecognizable, like compared to where I was even in 2020 mm-hmm. And then go further back. And it's like, wow, if 10 years ago, you told me this is what I would be doing, how I would be doing it, and who I'd be doing it with, I would be like, I'm sorry, excuse me, what now? But yet, and this is where it's alignment, it makes total sense.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you again. And before we wrap here, you know, people are probably super intrigued, either the return listeners or the new listeners. So what's the best way for them to reach out, maybe find out more, connect with you, because maybe their door just cracked open?
Yeah. So I don't have a specific human design offering that I advertise, but I am always willing to walk this path with people who are curious. So the best way to connect with me is actually my website, which is untanglehappiness.com. And there's I think the only call to action on the whole website is to book some time with me. So if this is you, if this is what you're interested in, let's talk and we'll figure out a path forward that makes sense.
Simple and profound. I love it. Thanks so much, Becky. This was great to reconnect and stand in our alignment and in our own stories. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thank you.